Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, the website is www.mecu.com. And if I said too many W's, it's only three W's and mecu.com. In this first hour, we're going to look at the issue of people under the age of 21 who are incarcerated in adult systems. And I wish I could say this was a new issue, but it's not a new issue. I was telling our guest before we went on the air that in 1975 and 76, maybe I'm showing my age a little bit, but 1975 and 76, I worked in the correctional system, and I was hired to run a therapy counseling program for people under 21 in the adult system. This was at the Hagerstown Correctional Facility. That was a while back, and which says this is still going on 40 years later. Do I have my math right? Just about 40 years later, more. That we're seeing this issue has not gone away. And that program existed because at that time the federal government offered these grants to states to deal with intractable problems inside the prison system that couldn't be addressed. And that problem was what happens to young people who have no place to go who are serving time with grown men. We're still seeing that today. A report came out this week that has been in the news. It's called Just Kids, Baltimore's Youth in Adult Criminal Justice System. And we're going to talk about that report today with people who worked on it. We have with us in the studio Laura Furr, who is Senior Director of the Youth Justice Initiatives at the Community Law and Action. John Nethercutt is Executive Director of the Public Justice Center. Lisa Hatcher is the mother of a young man who has been incarcerated, who was incarcerated in the adult system. And Heyman Burton joins us by phone. He was featured in the article in The Sun. He was arrested at 16 and served time with adults. And Heyman Burton, Lisa Hatcher, John Nethercutt, Laura Furr, welcome. Good to have you all with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.
Heyman, I appreciate you coming at the last second. It's a pleasure to have you on with us as well. You all can join us out there at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. This is a very complex question because it's something that we have covered over and over again for almost the 17 and a half years that we've been on the air in public radio in Baltimore. It's, as I said, something that I worked in 1975, 1976, inside the state prison system. It is fueled by laws that were passed in the 1990s to make sure that young people who were accused of certain crimes are charged as adults, whether they're guilty or not, in this system, and fueled by a perception that we have young black people in the streets who are out of control, who are dangerous to the rest of society, who are super predators and need to be separated from us. So this is and so it doesn't have the fuzzy, touchy, feely thing of taking care of our children wrapping itself around it. It has to do with perceptions of young people that need to be somewhere else and that need to be treated as adults because they've committed heinous crimes. When we ask for a statement from the two major political campaigns for governor, Governor Ehrlich's campaign did not respond to our request for a statement on this issue. Governor O'Malley's campaign did, and Sean Adamek, who is one of his press people in the governor's house, in the state government, not in his campaign, but in the state government, wrote back, the state's attorneys handle sentencing and in many respects are guided by the law on how to sentence. The governor has not been presented with a proposal to change the current guidelines. In the absence of that proposal, the governor supports the current law but is interested in working with State's Attorney Association to review that law. There obviously needs to be some balance when considering the vast array of juvenile offenders, including those terrible cases of 17-year-old violent repeat offenders. And I said his office at least responded. We did not hear from Governor Ehrlich's campaign. Senator DeVore in the Department of Juvenile Services said, appreciates the hard work that the Just Kids Partnership put into researching and drafting the report. DJS looks forward to reviewing the report and continue to work alongside the Department of Public Safety and youth advocate organizations to ensure that Maryland's youth are treated fairly and appropriately under the law. So that's the official word. And so let's talk about what's going on here. And I think that, Laura Furr, let me let you begin. I mean, this report and in a sense what it says to us.
Sure. Well, one of the things is as we're starting to think about building this new jail, and as we're starting to some statutes that were considered in the General Assembly last year would have increased the number of charges that would have sent to youth or automatically to the adult system, we decided that it really was time to be taking a look at what's actually happening to these youth and the youth that are actually ending up here. And we really looked at the data. We really looked at the facts. We looked at some national studies, and we looked at some local data that we pulled ourselves to really find out what's actually happening. Some of the things that we found is that a third of the youth we're starting out just with kids who are charged as adults. So they're automatically charged as adults, no matter their history with DJS, no matter if they've had a prior offense. It doesn't matter, you know, if they were actively going to school, whatever. If they're a certain age and they're charged with a certain offense, they are automatically charged as adults, and they are automatically, if they're detained pretrial, they're detained in an adult jail. What we found is that roughly a third of those kids, are transferred back to the juvenile system after spending 5 months in an adult jail. We found that another third have their cases dismissed outright by the state's attorneys once they've reviewed those cases. And then we found that a third are actually fully prosecuted in the system, with only 10% of that original number actually ending up serving time in an adult prison. So we're putting these youth through this process of charging, incarcerating in an adult jail, giving them an adult record, all of this stuff that goes along with an adult charge, for the majority of whom don't end up actually needing or being sentenced to actual time in the adult prison system. And so one of the things that we're questioning here is what's the point of that initial adult automatic charge? Wouldn't it make more sense if we take every kid and every case and judge it individually and say, you start out in the juvenile system, do we think you really need to go to the adult system before we make that decision?
And what's the average amount of time these young people spend in waiting for trial, incarcerated?
The average overall is 6 months. The longest we've seen is 26 months pre-trial. So they've never been convicted of anything.
26 months in pre-trial.
Right. So they have not been convicted of any crime.
2 years and 2 months.
Right. And this is usually what happens is we're seeing 6 and 7 postponements. They go to a court. Case gets postponed. That's another 90 days. They go to court. Case gets postponed. Another 90 days.
Let me turn for a moment to Haman Burton, who joins us by phone, who was arrested at 16 years old, served time with adults in the adult system, and is now back at home under supervision, but at home. Haman, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Tell us your story. Tell the citizens of who are listening in Baltimore and around the nation right now your story.
Well, started out when I was 16 years old. I was at a friend's house, my girlfriend's house. My ex-boyfriend broke in. He broke in, he had a knife, and he began threatening me and her. And we got into a fist fight, in which I hit him with a bottle. And we got into a fight, and the guy broke up. And he left. He went to the hospital and told the police that I had a gun and that I shot him. So in turn, the police came and arrested me for attempt murder and for handgun charges when no one was ever actually shot. He never got shot. He never had bullet holes or bullet wounds or nothing. And I sat in pretrial for about 13, 14 months just to go to trial. When I finally went to trial, I got found not guilty for the attempt murder and all the handgun charges. And I got found guilty for a second degree assault, because I said that we got into a fight, and I wound up getting sentenced to 5 years. And I did about a little over two and a half years being in prison, being locked up. And now I'm in the house on home detention under supervision.
Locked up in an adult jail?
Yes, I was locked up in an adult prison.
And one of the things that you've said is how this changed you, how you'll never be the same since you were locked up as a juvenile in an adult prison.
Yes, definitely. Because when you take a walk and you go to adult prison, it's a totally different atmosphere. You don't feel the security. You don't have the resources that you need. Like, in adult prison, you go through a lot more stress. You go through a lot more adversity than you would in the juvenile facility, for instance. You might be in the prison and you might walk the yard and see somebody get stabbed. You might walk the yard and see anything happen. Whereas in the juvenile facility, you know that's not going to happen. You have a sense of security. In the adult prison, you might be sitting there with a person like me, for instance. I had a cellmate that I had 30 years in. And I didn't know how to take it when he was telling me he had 30 years and there's another person across the hall who had life. And I mean, it changes your whole perception on things. It really does.
Let me turn to John Nethercutt. John, I mean, you've been working in Public Justice Center for a while now. I think my now wife was actually working in that institution when you were hired.
Yes, 8 years ago.
8 years ago. And this is a hard one to put your hands around, I mean, as a legal advocate, but also in terms of getting the public to kind of put their hands around this. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. It's an issue that we have found that is very difficult, because I think on one hand you've got some very highly publicized and very awful crimes committed by youth, and what we see is there's a natural reaction to want to punish and distance yourself from those youth. And that's where a lot of these get tough on crime laws come from. And Mark, you'd referred earlier to in Maryland, there are actually 33 different laws that automatically charge a youth who commits certain crimes as an adult. And I think the kind of public reaction to that is that let's charge them as adults. Let's throw them away in the adult system. They've committed an adult crime. Let's make them do adult time. And we won't, and that will resolve the problem, that we won't have as much crime as a result of that, and that, you know, we won't see the problem anyway. And at one level, I understand and I hear the emotional response to that, but then as legal advocates and as advocates who have advised public policymakers, legislators, to what should be the right policy, we have to look at what's actually effective and what the outcomes of this is. And what we're seeing, and this is reported in the Just Kids report, is there's about 1,250 kids a year who are charged as adults. 1,000 of those are charged as adults automatically. And what that means is that nobody looked at their case on an individual basis before deciding to send them into an adult jail, and that they will face adult system. And as you heard from Hammond, you know, they're in there. I mean, just right off the bat, they're charged as an adult. They're put in an adult system. Most of them wait as much as 5 months, that's the average, before they get a hearing to decide whether to send them back to the juvenile system, because they really shouldn't have been in the adult system in the first place, or to whether to keep them. And what we see then, and this is the result of studies nationally, but also what we're seeing locally, is we're not making the problem better by throwing the kids into the adult system. We're making the problem worse. So while people want to distance themselves from the problem and think that locking these kids up is going to solve anything, in fact, the evidence is that children who are put into the adult system are more likely to commit more crimes than those who are kept in the juvenile system. They're more likely to commit more violent crimes than those who are kept in the juvenile system. And they cost taxpayers three times as much over the life of the kid than they would if we kept them in the juvenile system. And the reason for that is that in the juvenile system, they get rehabilitative services. That's part of the mission of the Department of Juvenile Services. Whereas in the adult prison, there's really not even hardly a pretense of doing that. So while the public may think we're solving the problem by throwing kids into the adult system, in fact, it's making the problem worse. Now, you've got kids like Hammond, and, you know, God bless him, but he's coming out, he's doing well. He's had a horrible experience, and it's hardened him. We hope, you know, he'll make it, but there are many, many kids who don't. And when you take the whole class of kids who have committed these crimes and just throw them in the adult system, like I say, it's counterproductive. And I don't think people realize that. I know legislators don't seem to be focusing on that. They're responding to the public outcry about particular crimes, and they want to make a law that affects 1,000 kids a year based on, you know, the public reports of a number of them. And it's not, from the Public Justice Center's standpoint, that's not a good way to make public policy. We really should make public policy more based on the facts than on, you know, a satisfying emotional response to a particular situation.
I want to turn to our other guest here, Lisa Hatcher, who's mother of a young man who was incarcerated for 20 months.
Yes. I'm sorry, yes.
That's all right. And I think that the pain and pressure it puts on families of the young people who are incarcerated to come out is also something we don't hear very much about.
Yes. I think a lot of people need to speak out more about this situation, because for me, my son was 15 years old when he was incarcerated, and his trial went on for 20 months, and it was dismissed. And the thing that just gets me the most is that during his time there in the prison, it created my son into a monster. When he was released in March, it just seemed like trouble followed him wherever he went. His attitude became much, much worser. You know, I just seen a big, big difference in him. He strayed away from myself, my family. It felt as though he left as a child. He came back as a man, you know, but it strayed our relationship. And I'm trying to get it back slowly but surely. But it's taken some time. It's taken a toll on me, my other two children that I have as well. You know, it just has been stressful. I'm blessed and thankful that God has brought him back home to me. But, you know, you can't get that 20 months back. I could never get it back.
He spent 20 months waiting for trial?
Yes. It was, they kept postponing it, like Laura said. We would go to jail. They would postpone it for 90 days. We would go to court, again.
That's okay. That's right.
And they would postpone it another 90 days. He had 6 postponements to be total. Yep.
And when he went to court?
They just dismissed it.
And all this time he was in adult detention?
Yes, and he didn't get any probation, anything. They just dismissed it.
On Eager Street?
Yes.
And we'll talk to Hayman in a minute again, but you're saying your son came back a changed person.
Yes.
Not the same boy that went to jail.
Not the same boy. He was very affectionate, always gave me hugs and kisses. I have to pretty much strangle him to give me a hug and a kiss now. You know, and I miss that.
How old is he?
He's 17.
And can I ask what he was charged with? Is that fair to ask?
Yes, he was charged with attempt to murder and some other charges. I never really got the full report of his charges because I was just mentally distraught. You know, my mom and other family members helped out with his attorney fees. It was just overwhelming to where sometimes I would have to pawn things in our house to just make sure that he had commissary or to make sure that I was able to get over to 401 East Eager Street to visit him. And I even walked back home sometimes, you know, but during the whole time, I didn't really have a lot of support. God was my support. He was the only thing that really got me through it.
Before we open the phones here, 410-319-8888, Laura, let me ask, I'm not going to kind of probe the specifics here because it's not fair to do at this moment, but, I mean, we're talking about a young man who was adjudicated innocent?
All of his charges were dismissed.
And dismissed so. Why?
State's attorneys have a lot of reasons. Usually it's they don't have enough evidence and they decide all of a sudden that the case isn't what they thought it was or... you know, the DNA evidence comes back finally from the lab, and it's not as good as they thought it was. You know, it can be any number of things, but...
And how much of this could have been known at the beginning?
you never know. You know, I mean, sometimes it can be a witness decides all of a sudden they're not going to testify.
Let's say for argument's sake,
right.
Just your case or in Haman's, your son's case or in Haman's case, which is just indicative of when you say that one third of all young people have their cases dismissed,
right.
Mm-hmm. One third are prosecuted, and one third are
transferred back to juvenile.
Transferred back to juvenile.
Right.
And 10% of those one third that are prosecuted or convicted, the rest are not.
10% actually spend time in prison,
whereas
the rest
right.
of them
or,
might plead guilty or what have you, and they go home on probation or something like that.
So and given the way the system is designed now, what else could happen to these young people instead of being put into adult prison? Where else would they go? I mean, let's say your son is home.
Yes.
And before we turn back to Haman, but your son is home. He was charged with a crime that's a pretty serious crime. Attempted murder is not mm-hmm. a lightweight crime to be charged with.
Right.
So what should happen to a young man who's 15 years old who's charged with a crime of attempted murder? What happens to him? What do we do instead?
Well, in your question, I mean, are you asking under the current law or what we would like to have happen?
Both. Both.
Because that's two different questions.
Both.
So the current law mandates exactly what happened, that he's charged automatically as an adult.
He has the judge has no choice. The boy has no choice. The system has no choice. He's charged as an adult.
The only level of choice that he could have is something like with Haman's case, where the state's attorney is reviewing the facts and determines, am I going to charge this person with something like attempted murder, first-degree assault, both of which will get you charged as an adult, or am I going to charge him with second-degree assault or something like that, which is going to get him charged as a juvenile?
So the prosecutor has some element of discretion. The judge never sees the case at this point. So the child, under current law, is put into the adult system automatically. That's the point of the law. Okay. Our recommendation from the report, Mark, is that, first of all, we should have a presumption that any youth charged as an adult should be housed, should be jailed in the juvenile system, not in the adult system. So at least start in the juvenile system. Now, judges do have the authority under current law to what's called judicial waiver to send the child up to the adult system, but that's after the judge actually gets a chance to look at the facts, as opposed to automatically sending them there now.
This is the argument, though, people are making, which is why they need to build a new jail.
To house juveniles who are automatically charged as adults.
Right.
Right.
To separate them from the adult population.
Right. And they do need to be separated from the adult population, but they're still going to be housed in an adult facility that's run by the Department of Corrections or the Department of Pretrial Division. And they're still not mandated to do any of the rehabilitative things that we ask from the juvenile system, that the juvenile system is required to do.
And if we would reform the juvenile system so that most kids who are charged with nonviolent crimes are not incarcerated in an adult prison, are not incarcerated, period, then what we call the kids who are now sent to the new jail now for young people downtown could be used for those kids and supervised by a juvenile system as opposed mm-hmm. by an adult system. If we reform the system internally so young people are not put in prison because of crimes that are not violent.
Correct.
Haman, let me ask you what you think should happen, and then we'll open the phones.
What I think should happen, me personally?
Yes.
I really think that they should really look into the crimes before they send us to the adult system, because my crime that I got convicted of was a second-degree assault. Which in all I would have been charged as a juvenile if they would have just looked at my case a little bit further. Instead of me going through the pain, instead of me going through the whole adult prison system and going through some of the things I went through, I would have been in the juvenile system. And the rehabilitation in the juvenile system is way better. Like, they got out-of-state placements for kids. And that's, to me, that's the best thing I think that can happen to a child that's in trouble or a youth. Like myself, for instance, in trouble, is to get a change of environment and a change of people and get the motivation and the structure that they need to do better. Because if we constantly in the same environment, coming home to the same environment, we're gonna keep doing the same thing, not unless you have the mind power and the will to want to do better.
Heyman, I was told earlier, just to let people know a little bit about you, and I want to come back to Lisa to talk a bit about your lives in reality and what you face and how tough the things are that you are facing, Lisa, as a mother of three children raising three boys with the tug of the street, which I promise we will get to when we're in the green room. And for you, Heyman, I understand you were also, when you were in school, it wasn't as if you were just running amok. Did I hear the story right that you asked for a second special class so you could study Shakespeare?
Yes, I did. Yes, I have. I studied Shakespeare. I love literature. I love reading. And I was actually in advanced placement classes, and I've done school trips and projects and things like that. I mean, I wasn't entirely a bad person. Like right now, I'm trying to get into Morgan right now as we speak. I'm working on going to college. So at the same time, they took away a future. They delayed. They didn't take it away, but they delayed it, and they made things a little harder for me now that I have an adult record to even get into college, to even get a job. I've been searching for a job for about 4 or 5 months now just to try to help me, I mean, get the things that I need because I refuse to return back to the things I used to do. I mean, they just made it that much harder for me. But at the same time, a lot of youth don't have the mind frame that I have. They don't have the intelligence and the willpower that I have to do the things that I do and to take the pain and the heart and all that and turn it into something positive.
We're going to take a brief break. We're going to come back, and we're going to go back to the phones here. Angela, Epiphany, and Tim, all who have called in, we're going to hear your thoughts, come back to your thoughts. We want to turn to Lisa Hatcher to talk about what it's like to try to raise three boys and the pressure you're under to do that and what this tug of the streets and her relationship with her son. And I want all of us to reflect for a moment on where we think the system should go. What should happen here? We're all afraid of young people in the streets who are violent. That's the culture that we've bred, the fear culture that we've bred. But what's the reality of what we face? And what's the reality young people face? And think about it yourself for a minute. You're 15 years old. You've never been to prison. You've been charged with a crime that you may be innocent of. And you're put into an adult system with grown men who are facing life, who are doing life. Is that the world we want for our children? Even the ones who have been arrested? Think about this for a minute. What should we be doing? 410-319-8888. On the way to our break, I want to remind you that support for WEAA is provided by Baltimore for Healthy Babies. Far too many babies in Baltimore City die before their first birthdays because they were not sleeping safe. Your baby should always sleep safe, alone, on their back, in a crib. For more information on how to help your babies sleep safe, go to healthybabiesbaltimore.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We're talking about the 1,200 young people in our state. Is it a state? Did I have that right? Who are charged as adults and have no choice but to be charged as adults because of the crime they've been accused of, not convicted of, and then put in prisons with adult men. Is that the kind of world we want? Is there a better way for us to do this? Is what we're wrestling with here today on the Mark Steiner Show with our guests, because the report that came out, funded by Open Society Institute, Casey Foundation, and others, partially put together by two of our guest organizations here, the Public Justice Center and the Community Law in Action. The report is called Just Kids, Baltimore's Youth in Adult Criminal Justice System, which you can link to at steinershow.org and see the report yourself and read it, and with both the executive summary and the entire report will be attached on our website. We are joined by Lisa Hatcher, who is a mother of a young man who was incarcerated for 20 months in the adult system only to be let go and not convicted, not charged, not convicted, only to be let go. But spent 20 months in an adult jail, as she said, came back at 17, not the same boy, she said, who was sent away. Haman Burton was arrested at 16, who served time with adults in an adult prison system for a crime that, and we'll hear him in a minute, he thinks if he had been a white kid in the suburbs, he wouldn't be in prison. We'll hear that part of his story, too, in a few minutes. Laura Furr is with us. She is Senior Director of Youth Justice Initiatives at Community and Law in Action, and John Nethercutt, Executive Director of the Public Justice Center. Number here is 410-319-8888. There are a lot of people calling in. Let's go to the phones. We'll come back to our guests. Angela, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling from Baltimore. I just want to commend these young men for going through what they had to go through and coming out. But a young man who's saying he can't find a job and is on his way to Morgan State, the best way to prove the system wrong is to be successful. Keep doing what you're doing. I have a son that's 20 years old and who's a junior at Bowie. When he was 16 and he was awarded a scholarship to go to Bowie, they went out. A fight broke out. Security guard got hurt. My son, who has never been suspended, has never been in trouble, had never been anything with the system, got locked up, charged as an adult. Through the grace of God and Warren Brown, none of that stuff stuck to my son. I myself, when my same son was 2 years old, I worked for the state's attorney's office in the juvenile division for Baltimore City. And I only worked there for 3 years because after 3 years, I couldn't take it anymore because I would hear the attorney say every time those children would come in there with a charge, and I'm talking about you had children that were 13, 14, 15 years old, had folders that were 5-6 inches thick that had to be held together with a couple of rubber bands. And I would hear attorneys say, oh, don't pay him no mind. One more time, we're going to move him up as an adult. I couldn't take that because I knew I had sons of my own. And I could not be a part of the system who sat back and allowed kids, because I heard a young man say, one of the guests say earlier, that nobody looked at those kids on an individual basis. And I watched that firsthand. They did not. A lot of those kids needed help in so many areas, came from abusive homes, had a lot of other issues, and all they did was just sat and just allowed those kids to hang their own selves so they could just push them into the adult system. And it's horrible. It's horrible.
I'm glad you held on. I appreciate your comments and thoughts. I'm glad your son is okay, and I deeply appreciate your courage in standing up and leaving your job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go another caller here before we come back to our guests. Try to go back and forth here. Epiphany, you're on the air.
And blessings to everyone. I was just calling to try to give some encouragement to the mother and the young male that have gone through a lot. You know, life is very short, but at the same time, we definitely have to make a footprint while we're here. And one thing that I do want to say, because I have not gone through anything similar, but I've gone through my own issues, we often say, why me? God only gives those trials to those that can handle them, so why not? To the young brother, I would say to you, please, please, I pray every day when I watch the news. We need more situations, meaning that people can turn back and see what they've gone through and make better strides forward. You're going to be perfect. You're going to be great. If you can, maybe look into the community in which you come from and try to be a big brother, or maybe look at your career and hopefully try to do something to prevent this from happening to another youth that you may know of or other youths that are out there. But you're going to be wonderful. And to the mom, hang in there. It's women like us that stay behind our children and that we fight for them. We have to be their voice, because other than that, they will never be heard. That's it.
Thank you, Epiphany.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Let me turn to the two voices we've been talking about and then get a caller in and come back to the attorneys as well about how we can change this and how this is going to change and what kind of laws we need to have in this community. Let's see, we have Tim Hank and Linda. Hold on, we're going to come to your calls as well. But one of the things, Lisa Hatcher, I think you were talking about when we were in the green room, is that people just don't understand and kind of get very accusatory towards the mothers of the children who are incarcerated. Do you
yes,
mind?
Yes. During the time while my son was incarcerated, not only friends, family, and outsiders that didn't know me were judging me, you know, just by my son's actions, that he was not even guilty of from the beginning. You know, they always say, how could you let this happen? When at the end of the day, when my son leaves the house in the morning, I'm expecting him to go to school and to do what he needs to do while I'm going to work and do what I need to do to put food on the table. You know, in a lot of cases, their dads aren't around. A lot of our children come from broken homes, so we can only do but so much. And when you have the older guys in the streets that's like a father figure to them and helping out, buying them sneakers and making sure that they have a couple dollars in their pocket, they are considered role models. And it's not always a positive outlook. It's not always a positive situation on, you know, what's going to happen. You just don't know. And I feel like I'm a very good parent. I tried the best I could. My other two children are very good examples. So I know you could do the best that you can, but after, you know, at the end of the day, they have their own minds. You know, we can't be two places at one time.
And is your son back in school now?
Yes, he is back in school, and he's on the ball. He's doing everything that he needs to.
But still in pain inside.
Yeah, you know, that pain never goes away. You know, he's matured now. He has a mustache and beard now. When he left, he didn't have any of those things, you know. So you can't get that 20 months back.
Hey, man, you can't get your time back either. But you were saying, I heard one of the thoughts you had was that if you had been a white suburban kid and had the same situation, you don't think this would have happened.
No, I definitely don't. I don't think that at all. I think they looked at me as a person. They didn't look into it. They didn't do... a criminal background check. They didn't go around and ask people, what kind of person is Haymon Burton? Do you think he would do something like this? They didn't go around and ask people, have you ever seen him with a gun? Does he have a violent nature? Anything. They just went and arrested me. Whereas I think if I'd have been a white kid in the county, they would have looked into it and probably even looked at the crime scene a little deeper and seen that there wasn't any bullet holes, that he never got shot. They would have checked the medical reports and saying that he didn't have gunpowder residue or burns or stippling around the places where he say he got shot. They would have looked and saying that there was no actual gunpowder, no shells, no anything, no nothing really giving a reason to arrest somebody on attempted murder.
And you, as you said, your story was you were defending your girlfriend when her ex-boyfriend broke in the house. John, you wanted to...
I just wanted to make a point that one of the findings in the report has to do with the fact that African-American youth are disproportionately represented in the youth who are charged as adults. African-Americans are 63% of the city population, but 99% of the youth in jail are African-American. African-American youth are more likely to be arrested, are more likely to be charged as adults, and are more likely to be waived into the adult system than non-African-Americans. So Haymon's feeling that he may have been treated differently is actually borne out in the statistics.
Now, I don't have this number in front of me, but I know, because I read the stats just the other week, that kids in Howard County, mostly white kids in Howard County, have a higher rate of drug use than black kids in the city, fewer rates of kids who are arrested and sent to prison. Something is amiss.
Yeah, I think nationwide, actually, that's borne out, that more white kids commit drug crimes, but more black kids are arrested for drug crimes.
Right. Yeah, and that's in our report, too.
No, it is. That's why I'm bringing that out there. It's a lengthy report. You can read the entire report on our website, steinershow.org, or you can read the executive summary. Maybe that'll spur you on to read the entire report. 410-319-8888. Let us go to Tim. You're on the air.
Hi, Tim.
Hey,
how are you?
Well, welcome.
Well, it seems like everyone that's calling in is calling with a sympathetic ear and a sympathetic comment, and I can appreciate that, but you know, I have one question. I came in a little late, and that is disproportionately incarcerated, true, but if the kids commit adult crimes, should they be punished for that? If the kids commit crimes that are not specifically adult crimes, should they be punished for that?
Those are legitimate questions, Laura Furr.
Let me let John take that one.
John, another guy.
I'd say crimes aren't specifically adult or children crimes. Crimes are, a murder is murder, whether it's committed by an adult or child. The issue here is, should a child who commits that be charged as an adult? Our recommendation, based on the studies here, is that that should be an individual determination made by a judge after consideration of the facts, and that, yes, some youth will be charged as adults, as they were before all of these laws that came about in the 90s. But we can see that when judges and prosecutors actually look at the facts of the case on an individual basis, that the vast majority of them are not and should not be charged as adults.
You know, the question was, where are we going to put them? My thing is true. I think some of these kids shouldn't be put in adult penitentiaries, adult jails. But I think that if you commit a crime, hurt someone, I think that you should be made to pay a price for that.
This is a legitimate point. Let's wrestle with this for a minute. All right? So you have young people, some young people, who do commit violent crimes and heinous crimes in the streets of Baltimore and throughout the state of Maryland.
Yes.
That's a fact.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Yes.
So how should it be handled? Clearly, when you have a young person like Lisa's son, who was in jail for 20 months and then was let go, something's wrong. So let's say a kid is charged with attempted murder. Then what should happen? What happens to this child? Where should, and he or she is a child, whether they committed the crime or not. They're not an adult. What should happen to this child? Lisa, you were about to say something?
Yes, I think they should be sent to the juvenile facility where they belong. And then once they get of age to be shipped to the adult system, then send them. But it's just like, you know, a child being in the adult system is just not good. I don't condone the fact of any violence at all. And I think everybody is accountable for their own actions. But I also think that they should be put into the right facilities as well and not treated like an animal.
And also the larger question here is, what are we trying to accomplish out of this? If all we want to do is put them away from society for 6 months, punish them, make the most horrible things that we can think of happen to them happen, mm-hmm. then we're accomplishing what we want to accomplish. If what we want to actually see is for them to come home, because they are going to come home, even the longest sentence that we saw in our study was 15 years. That kid's coming home at 30, even at the longest sentence that we saw. So if when that youth comes home, what do we want to see out of that youth? Do we want to see and this is a mother talking, Lisa, calling her son, you know, I mean, he's changed. And he's not the same person anymore. And he's, you know, he's not as person like as he was before. Do we want to see that, or do we want to see a kid who's actually got the skills and the ability and the drive to succeed in the way that society expects them to succeed? And those are the two questions that we have to deal with.
Because Heyman, go ahead.
Am I still there, Mark?
You may, Tim, because we have a lot of other callers.
Okay, just one last quick comment. You know, I think we should start again, and we don't talk about it enough, and people are saying the dads are not, you know, at home and broken homes. We have to find a way to get these kids, engendered to do things such as not committing crimes. Mothers have to take some responsibility for this, and it's just a whole other conversation. Thanks, Mark.
I appreciate you being part of the show, Tim. And Heyman, before we go back to the next caller, I mean, if there had been a system in place that was a system that you would call more just than we have now, what should have happened to you after you were arrested for cutting another man with a bottle?
Well, for I didn't cut him with a bottle. I hit him with a bottle.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hit him with a bottle. I apologize. Go ahead.
And for one, I think just like Miss Lisa, I mean Miss Laura said, and the mother said on the phone, that I should have been sent to the juvenile system until they looked into it and saw actually what happened.
So the question, well, a question I'm interested to explore is, how do you create a more humane system and get legislators to understand we have to create a more humane system?
Right. And it's not an easy answer, because it takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of human capital. It takes a lot of people who really care. That's hard to find in this world, frankly.
Let's go back to the phones here and go to Linda in Catonsville. You're on the air.
Hi. Good evening.
Hi,
how
Linda.
Are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
Okay. First of all, I want to pray, and I thank God for the people who are trying to make a difference. But I want to make a quick statement, because I believe that the system, as we know it, has created more criminals than existed. And I, like the one caller just said, I believe that it should be that they, a child that is underage commits a crime, they should be placed in a juvenile system where they can be worked with, where they can be super, you know, social workers and even psychiatrists, whoever, counselors, to dig down into the situation to find out what caused this child to commit the crime that they committed. Because I'm telling you, and I say this, and this is not a put down to all of parents, but there are some parents that make it bad for the good, because I'm going to tell you, some of the parents need to be investigated in some of these cases, because I'm telling you, many have thrown their children away. They're so busy into doing what they want to do. No discipline. They don't care where they go, when they come, when they go, you know, and they just allow to just do what they want to do.
Okay.
Something has got to be done.
Linda.
And I pray to God for the change in the system.
All right. Linda, thank you so much for your call.
All right.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much. So I'd like to try another call in here, but I'm curious now, where do you think we go with this report? Where does this go? Where do we go now?
I think the next step is, and I was actually glad, Mark, that you started the show by having contacted the two gubernatorial candidates. And the next step is to start talking. We wrote this report, although many of the results of this are not new, but we wrote this report with the hope that it would spur a better conversation about where do we go with this. We'd like to start talking. The Just Kids Partnership, the parents, the children involved, the legal advocates, we'd like to start talking to the governor's office, to the Department of Juvenile Services, to the Department of Corrections, to the prosecutors and judges and defenders, everybody who's involved in this system, to see if we can start making some headway on this. We do believe, actually, that when we consider the facts, that we will be able to come up with some better policies. We have recommendations. We believe that the automatic charging of a youth as adults should end. We believe that that we should not imprison youth in adult jails while they're still youth. And we'd like to see if we can get, frankly, a better social consensus over some of these issues. The facts are here. We know what the truth is, but we need to be able to we need to have the policymakers hear this better.
Heyman, do you want to say something here before we run out of time?
No.
I want to tell you how much I appreciate you being willing to come on the show, and we want to stay in touch with you and what's going on.
Okay, thank you.
I deeply appreciate you being part of this.
Thank you.
Let's try to get – do we have time for another caller? Yes, no, up, down? Yes. One caller. Let's just try to get a caller on here. Who has been holding – Abdul, you're on the air.
Yes. Good evening, everyone. I just want to say this quickly. Many of these young males have become products of their environment, unfortunately. First and foremost, there are no men in their lives. And I make a clear distinction between men and males. A man is an individual that knows and fulfills his responsibility, regardless of the situation. A male either ignores the responsibility, knows the responsibility, and shirks it or here, and the majority of the callers are female. And I'm looking at the panelists are female. I can appreciate what they're saying, but keep in mind, and I'm not being a chauvinist or a sexist.
Go ahead.
Why don't you show a boy how to be a man? It takes a man, not a man, how to be a boy. I mean, be a man.
I appreciate that. Let me ask, is he only have like a couple of minutes left, Lisa? And Abdul was saying that we hear mostly women talking here, and it takes a man to teach a boy how to be a man. And you're a mother who is talking about the struggles you have. Can you respond to him?
Yes, I can definitely respond to that.
I have to get her mic up. Go ahead.
Yes, I agree. I think that was one of the reasons why my son probably had gotten into trouble, because it was no male role model in our house, no male figure. It was just me and my children, so the guys that showed him attention and showed that they cared, they were in the streets, and that's where he strayed. So I do believe we need more fathers and men to step up so that we can avoid situations such as this.
I mean, this is the kind of thing that takes stuff from all ends. It takes the Lamar Darnell Shields and others of the world who are working with young men and trying to build that world, David Miller and people like that who are trying to make that happen. And it takes the system to create a system that works for the young people who do get in trouble, so they don't end up in adult prisons. I mean, this is a very tough situation, but we have to get the community here to wrap its hands around this.
Right, and we do know what works, and it's just a matter of really doing that for every kid and taking every kid as an individual and not, you know, as a number or a set of cases or shuffle them around and he's not my problem today, I'm going to not deal with it. And it really is, it's just about believing in the kids and giving the kids the role models that they need.
I do appreciate all the work you've done to put this report together, and I appreciate everybody being willing to come in. Heyman Burton, the last minute to talk about his situation. Lisa Hatcher, wish you and your son all the luck in the world, and the rest of your children as well.
Thank you.
Love
so
to
much.
Meet you. And Linda Furr, Senior Director of the Youth Justice Initiatives at Community Law in Action, and John Ethicott, Executive Director of the Public Justice Center, for waging the battle to get this to our attention and turning things around. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
I do want to say earlier that we did ask the court system to join us with a comment as well. They didn't send a statement, but I said earlier that Governor Martin O'Malley sent a statement, as did the Department of Juvenile Services and Secretary of Divorce sent a statement that we read earlier. Those will be on our website. We did receive no statement or comment from Governor Ehrlich's campaign on this particular issue about juveniles in the adult system, so we want to be clear about all of that. As we go to break here, I want to remind everyone that the support for WEAA is provided by the Peabody Institute of the Johns Hopkins University. Starting October 14th, the 2010-2011 Peabody Jazz Series, 8 concerts by faculty-led student ensembles. For more information, 410-234-4800 or peabody.jhu.edu. We'll be right back, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Ambassador Akbar Ahmed, who is one of the world's leading scholars in Islamic studies, to talk about all manner of issues about Muslims in America, Islam in America, America's relations with the Islamic world. Stay with us. We'll be right back.